Welcome to the first episode of Season 2 of the Not Many Adults podcast, Pioneers for Children's Healthcare and Wellbeing. My name is David Cole, and I'm joined by my wife Hannah, and together we are the co-founders of children's charity Thinking of Oscar. The aim of Thinking of Oscar is to bring the future of healthcare to children. In this episode, we're going to be looking back on our first season of the Not Many Adults podcast, and also looking forward to the conversations that we're going to have during Season 2. So, is this episode 13 or episode 1 of Season 2?
I still think it's episode 1 of Season 2. What kind of a question is that? Try again.
So if you look back, 14 weeks now, what were your thoughts going into the first episode and first season of the podcast?
I didn't have any idea what to expect, really. I think you have had this idea in your head for such a long time. And I've always thought it was a brilliant idea in theory, but I couldn't quite see how we were going to do it with 2 full-time jobs, 3 kids in school nursery, or as it turned out, home learning and everything else in life. So, and then recording and editing. I just couldn't quite imagine it, but somehow we've done it, mostly you. So, I had no idea what to expect, and I knew it would be immensely interesting, so I was excited about all the different people we were going to have the opportunity to meet.
Well, I think it's exceeded my expectations in terms of we've been so lucky with the people that we've managed to speak to. It's just been, and I hope that everyone that has listened has felt the same way. You know, some of the people that we've managed to find and be introduced to and to introduce ourselves to have just been, you know, so incredible in terms of what they're doing. And but I think, you know, given that it's been, well, difficult year for everybody, but certainly for charities, we're lucky that in some respects, you know, we don't have overheads, as it were. But I think in terms of being able to do this podcast, it's really helped to keep the charity going, to, you know, help us to think about Oscar, not that we don't on a daily basis, but talk about him and show others, you know, what we're trying to do in his memory.
Yeah, every year we've done a lot of fundraising, and this year was obviously not the year for that. So yeah, I do feel really fortunate to have been able to fill it with something that's been so interesting. And I think that, you know, what struck me as we were going through all of the different conversations was there was so many times when we just got completely swept up in the conversation and there really wasn't a job for us to do other than listen. I know we're really biased because we find this whole broad area so interesting and we're very tied to it. But just time whizzed by. We kept aiming for 25-minute, 30-minute podcasts, and I think we universally failed across the whole season.
Well, the first one was good. That was you and I. We managed to do that.
Yeah, well, we should be able to make it today, but anybody with more substance than that, there was too much good stuff to learn.
Absolutely. Well, let's come to that. So during today's conversation, I think the idea is we want to look back on some of the conversations that we've had and then look forward to what we're hoping and to discuss in Season 2 and, you know, some of the conversations that we've got lined up, which are, you know, again, super exciting, right?
Yeah, for sure. There was a lot of common themes that went across many of the conversations. The first one that I really noticed was about the serendipity. So for many people whom we spoke to, the reason that they landed or have landed where they are now was not clear to them however many years ago when they first set out, and the paths that the different individuals have woven through their lives has been just intriguing. And I think what I learned from it is it's not specific to healthcare or innovation. It's more about, you know, the mystery of life and the paths we all lead. And it was just another reminder of, you know, none of us are really part of our own master plan. Who knows what's around the corner? So And those stories were told in a really inspiring way.
No, absolutely. And I'd really like to come back to that later, because I think one of the things that we have learnt over the course of, you know, doing all of this is I'm not sure we necessarily had a target audience specifically in mind. Mm. In some ways, when we started the podcast, just thinking, you know, about the reasons why we did it, there was three key themes. One was very selfishly to educate ourselves so we could continue to learn from others and continue to think about what we can do as a charity and what Thinking of Oscar can actually bring to the pediatric spectrum. The other one was to share the stories of others, because we've been taught, and I think we believe, that by sharing one story you can change the world. And the third one was, you know, singing from the rooftops and really being about the people that we're talking to, but also trying to inspire others to want to do more. And that serendipity, coming back to your point, I think is something that, you know, I want to think about at the end when we do think about, you know, who is this podcast for, and who are we trying to, you know, get to listen to it, and who would we like to be inspired by?
Yeah, I agree. The other thing that was related to that was to do with why did people get into the jobs and you know, commit their lives and their passions to what they had chosen. And scale was oftentimes the answer. So it was seldom to do with what that individual wanted to achieve, or they could see that by working in a certain way they could impact many more people. So Nick talking about research, and he really believes that, you know, by investing his life in research, then it's very clear that he can impact a much larger number of humans' lives than if he was to spend his life treating one after another after mm-hmm. another. Or Jo, when she was talking about the work she's been doing in Africa, and that's absolutely about creating leaders, and it's a very deliberate choice to achieve scale in that way. So different approaches, but all about just having a magnifying effect on how they devote their lives.
No, I think that's a very common theme, you know, just thinking about innovation in itself. So as you say, you could impact maybe, you know, a handful of patients on any given day in any given clinic, but actually if you can create a solution or a new pathway or you know, a new hospital, whatever it might be, then the impact is, you know, magnified hugely.
Yeah, agreed. There was another topic that came out, which was around empowerment, and that was perhaps one that was less surprising to us because we've done work in this area before, and so we knew about how important it was to empower children, whether that's at the younger age of the spectrum or the older ones, in their experiences. So Alberto had talked about including children in the treatment process and how important the role of the patients and their families was. Dom obviously talked about it. It's the whole reason why he set up his company in that side of his company in the first place. Ian talked about it as well, and Christian with the work that they're doing at the new children's hospital, and that's all been around designing a hospital setting that feels like home and gives a 360 approach to the person that is being treated. And it's there's so much thought going into what does it mean for the child, and maybe before you get into this area you don't appreciate how much consideration there is for that and the value of it.
And I think, you know, we were almost maybe naive when we called the first episode, or at least the second episode or first episode, that we were talking to an individual, which was Dom around Exploro. We called it empowerment, because that's exactly what Exploro is able to do for children that sadly have cancer. And I think we forgot, you know, in some respects, how important it is. I mean, we've done work in this area, but it was amazing how it came into pretty much every conversation that we had. And, you know, again, that's, you know, inspiring, but also shows, you know, that actually there's more that needs to happen in that area as well.
Yes. Then there was a piece around flexibility and imperfection that I really liked. So flexibility was to do with, and the reason it struck me was because in healthcare settings and in hospitals in particular, then you don't imagine it's about being flexible, because there's risks and processes and schedules, and there's a perception of a rigid world. And yet there was many conversations where we talked about flexibility. So Ian was talking about, for the clinical side of his role, he really enjoys needing to be flexible, and that if a child is going to allow you to check out their abdomen at a point in time, you do it, because 5 minutes later the inclination might have left them. Or Jo was a brilliant example when in Africa, when she was talking about the clinics, which isn't for a 9:20 slot or a 9:40 slot, but for an AM or a PM session, and the whole family plus the neighbours as well might come along because it's exciting, and you just engage with the children when they're ready to be engaged with. And I found that really intriguing. And then the imperfection side of that, just because of the, I'm kind of linking them together because of just a different and unexpected and less structured way of working, was triggered by some of the comments that Neil made at GOSH, where, you know, he was saying, if you're just waiting for everything to be lined up, if you're waiting for everything to be ready, you may never get there. You just need to start. And he was talking about that with respect to their data-driven digital initiatives that they have underway there, but it applies across the board.
And I think those are two great, you know, just initiative stories, thoughts, which would work for anyone from an entrepreneurial point of view, thinking about, you know, investing, obviously, we would like to say in child health, but really anywhere, in terms of being nimble and, you know, just, it doesn't need to be perfect. Let's just get it out there and start seeking and understanding what the benefits are and who's interested in it. But really, when it comes back to child health, in terms of, you know, what Joe was saying and others, I mean, they say don't work with children and animals, right? But you need to be so flexible when thinking about children, and therefore the environment that they need to be in needs to be, you know, really flexible with that. I mean, when Oscar was in hospital, when they were trying to, you know, take bloods or whatever it might be, it could have been on the ward, it could have been in the play area, it could have been, you know, when he was making a cup of tea or whatever it might be. You just need to be, you know, kind of have that flexibility, don't you?
That's right. And the other topic that came up that relates to that was to do with collaboration and what a particularly or exceptionally collaborative space this is. So that was with reference to academics collaborating with one another, or Michelle talked about it a lot when she was talking about the scientists and the clinicians working really closely together, and you know, just the importance of teams and extended teams being able to trust one another and work effectively together came up time and time again.
And I've always found that, actually, so you have conversations from an adult setting, and I guess it happens maybe less so in the UK, although I think it still does happen, but in the US, you know, all the hospitals, obviously a very different healthcare system, so all the hospitals are in some ways competing in terms of, you know, what patients they get and what specialities they're trying to do, and there is a little bit of that in the UK, but I guess our hope, as much as anything, is that given that it's children, given that you know, they are one of the most important things that, you know, that we have in this world, that collaboration is there and it can continue and get even better in the way that people are working, and you know, sharing of data, sharing of skills, sharing of understanding, whatever it might be, that collaboration is, you know, absolutely key to what's happening. And I think it is in some respects, but from what we've heard, you know, it can always be better.
Yeah, but also it's difficult. You can't really say it glibly, can you? Because there's people's roles and responsibilities and metrics and data governance. And there's so many things that where people would have an intention and aspiration. And as a human being, they would want to collaborate really freely. But in practice, it is very difficult. So, you know, it's easily said and much more difficult to achieve in practice.
Absolutely. And I guess we'll come on to some of those thoughts in terms of how that might change a bit later.
Yeah, indeed. Communication was another topic that came up, and it was Neil at Great Ormond Street that had made a comment when he was reflecting on, you know, what he wants to see improve in healthcare. And he talked about data standards in the first instance, but when he elaborated, he said what he really meant was more standard ways of communicating, so that if You have a child that's being diagnosed with a certain condition, and so you give that child a label to describe what that condition is. What do you really mean by that? And I found that interesting because the more you think about it, the more you understand the scope for misunderstanding and miscommunication that can arise. But then the more I thought about it, I thought, but that applies in day-to-day life. That applies between parents and kids, between husbands and wives, between colleagues, between friends, you know, what we can speak the same language and still not understand one another. So think how, you know, the impact of that and the severity of that is, you know, when it's, when the communication is much more critical. And actually thinking about it, you know, there's a project that we had done 2-3 years ago now with Oxford University Hospitals Trust, which was to do with simulation training. And the whole point of that was not the kit that we bought in the slightest. It was all about giving people an opportunity to practice clear and effective communication when they were in situations of very high risk, very high stress, and you know, where the stakes were incredibly high. So in a life or death situation for a child. And yeah, you can see why that type of training is essential.
And there were some scenarios that were mentioned around, you know, taking a viewpoint from other industries, so Formula One, for example.
And yeah, I love that. And that's one of the ones that we want to come back to in this series, isn't it? Just learning from other industries. There were the Formula One model was brilliant. So who was it that talked about that first?
I think it was Alberto.
And then because Jo described her way of working when in with the teams in Africa very similarly. But the concept was that the Formula One car comes into the pit stop and the mechanics all crowd around. Everybody does their job and the car leaves happily. And the same idea would be true if you brought a child into the healthcare giving setting. And then rather than the child going to have, you know, to be, they go and register with a receptionist and then they sit down in the waiting area and then they go and have get weighed by the nurse and then they come back and sit in the waiting area again. And then an hour later, or, you know, a few minutes later, they go and see the consultant and then, and so on. And so their morning is expanded and expended, I beg your pardon. And, you know, it can be difficult, but everybody has been seen. Whereas this Formula One model would be that all of the specialists can meet with the child, and it fosters much more easy cross collaboration across the different disciplines, and it is a patient centric, child centric journey. How you implement that in existing healthcare systems, I'm not so sure, but the concept's awesome. The last area that I had been reflecting on before we thought further ahead to season two was one of the quotes that Alberto had given. He just talked about thinking big and thinking small at the same time. And I just love that. So what he's talking about is that you're doing whatever you need to do in the short term, but you've always got one eye on the horizon with respect to what the art of the possible is. And that is so that you are prepared for the future by the time you arrive in the future. I really enjoyed that. I thought that it related to a lot of, you know, Paul's work as well. He has such massive goals of, you know, his passion is about ensuring that diseases that you see in adulthood can be reduced or eliminated by targeting those diseases or other factors whilst in childhood. And then Michelle similarly, you know, her goals are absolutely massive. So the program of zero childhood cancer is as bold an ambition as you could dream. But these massive ideas being worked towards incrementally are how important change is achieved.
Yeah, so it's all about the preventative agenda. So being able to prevent things that are going to happen later on in life by essentially addressing them during childhood. And I think Paul talks about that a lot. Obviously, Michelle's whole basis for her research and her work is all about that. And I think there's a much bigger conversation to have in terms of what the potential outlook could be. People need to start modelling that, I think, in order that the governments, you know, around the world can see the impact that's going to have as we move forward.
Well, and actually, maybe the fact that it's so, I mean, if somebody said, let's eliminate childhood cancer, or, you know, let's get to the bottom of picking diabetes or something is probably a really poor choice because I'm not educated enough to pick the right one. But, you know, where Paul's looking for conditions that have impacts in later life, if you could reduce the number of humans that were living with those conditions in later life by addressing some factors in childhood, then it makes a lot of sense. But my point is that if you avoided the really big problems, then you'd never achieve any change. So you might as well have the really big goal and then do small things to get there. The other topic, by the way, that we had really appreciated was that around education and the points of view on education. And so many people talked about that. Damien, you know, his belief was around education exists in order to be shared. And Tessa shares a similar philosophy. So we don't forget the bubbles. A lot of the work that they're doing there is that medics are incredibly busy people. And when they are looking to educate themselves on the latest insight in a given area, it's not lightweight reading. And so what Tessa and her peers who are all donating their time free of charge are looking to do is make important insights digestible. So they're about translating knowledge into what does this mean for me, and something that some an interested professional can just digest when they have 5-10 minutes to spare. And they're deliberately writing blog style posts that can be read in 4-6 minutes. And you know, that's taking something incredibly complex and making it very simple so that it's usable. But this idea of sharing knowledge cropped up time and time again, didn't it?
Absolutely. And it was one of the things I think very early on that we had identified in terms of education. And I don't think we specifically talked about it on the podcast. We kind of anecdotally looked at it, but still there's not enough want to be clinicians, so junior doctors, nurses, whatever it might be, going into pediatrics, specifically studying pediatrics. I think in the UK they junior doctors tend to have a small amount of time during their training that will be pediatric training, but more often than not other people, you know, they go and do other specialties, whereas we need more doctors. It is needed that more doctors, more nurses, more care specialists actually want to go into the pediatric spectrum. And again, you know, I think if the preventative agenda and in terms of looking forward ahead was really modelled out and people could see it, then maybe that's a way of getting more people in.
It may come up in one of the topics that we're hoping to get into in this next series of conversations around the support from the board, because Ian, when he was talking about the work at Alderhay, and also Neil from Gosh, both referred to the importance of the positive impact from their sea level in order to be able to achieve what they had done. So I'd love to get into that into some more detail. And
well, let's talk about season two. I think we've kind of covered the main topics in terms of what we were hoping to look at. The typical thing in terms of how you and I work is that you've got oodles of notes that you've taken down and that you're looking at and you're helping it. And I'm looking at a couple of different bullet points I've written down.
On the back of an envelope you've taken out of the recycling bin.
But nice. Hopefully we're making sense.
So, yeah, I mean, nutrition was one that has always been interesting to us. When we were in hospital for that really short period of time with Oscar, and we weren't and we're still not nutrition gurus now, but there was something. So we were very fortunate because our employers were both incredibly supportive. So we were able to tag team it so that he was never alone in hospital. And we were only there 3 weeks, weren't we? But if the one person was there, then when the next person arrived, they would bring, you know, you or I would bring for ourselves and the other one some nutritious food from home, and then we'd swap around and more food would come in from home the next day, and we would take it in turns looking after Holly or being with Oscar in hospital. And we were really conscious of it at the time, even though I wasn't consciously stressed, or because it wasn't a bad situation until it was a disastrous situation. But we were conscious that looking after ourselves and getting the best sleep that we could and getting some vitamins in ourselves, as opposed to anything that beige that was available from WH Smith's downstairs or the vending machine, was going to help us make better decisions and, you know, be alert to look after Oscar. So we had that awareness from the hospital itself. And then I remember really early on, we both went to look around Alderhay Children's Hospital, you first and probably a year later me. And And they had the kitchens on every ward, which looked like a massive luxury. And in fact, they had learned was a huge cost saving because they were providing children with the food they wanted when they wanted it. And it was a really positive part of the healing process. And there was a lot of less waste. And we were incredibly struck by that. So we've had this interest bubbling away for 6 or 7 years now. So it'd be brilliant to look at that more this season.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's the healing process. That's the you know, the big thing that strikes me when it comes to nutrition. And I'm really excited because we do have conversations set up during season two where we're going to be going into nutrition in more detail.
Brilliant. I'm looking forward to that. And then you mentioned another one that I'm really up for as well, which is around learning from other industries. And we were mulling over last night whether we should set up some kind of a round table and get, you know, whether we pick it industry wise or just some common interest group. I haven't really quite worked it out yet. But so, you know, Ian and Alberto both spoke specifically about their interest in learning from other industries. So I think that'd be really fun to talk about. I just don't know how yet. Have you got a plan?
I've got a few things up my sleeve in terms of how we might look at that. But I think the other corresponding theme in that is, how do you get industry, in whatever guise that is, thinking about how they can also help in pediatrics? And that's the conversation that I want to broker.
Yeah. Well, that will be interesting. It links as well with another one that I know we've got some more work coming down the line on, which is around investment. So when, and I know that we'll reflect on this later on in this particular conversation, but when we were asking everyone that we were talking to about things they'd like to change, there were so many times about investment in child health, investment in pediatric research came up. And we've experienced this in our short time in the field so far, that it's a relatively small market segment to address. And so industry is not always interested in investing. And so how do you balance building a business case with doing the right thing for the world?
Yeah. And I know you tell me off because I get really excited about all the conversations that we have, and we have spoken to literally everyone we've spoken to has been inspirational and amazing. But I'm really looking forward to this conversation as well. And as a spoiler alert, this is next week's conversation. So we've, as you know, because obviously you were part of it, we have recorded a podcast already, with an investor in child health technology or in child health. And that's going to be coming, that's going to be coming down the line very shortly.
I only tell you off because after every single podcast, like, we'll finish a podcast and we'll go, oh, that was amazing. And it always is amazing. But you do it when we're recording it. And then I think if every single time in the conversation we go, thank you, that was the most amazing conversation, I'm completely inspired. But if you do it every single time, then it... then it doesn't sound sincere, even though when we stop recording, you know, generally we're bowled over and a little bit speechless for a while. I usually have a cry. Not every single time, but...
But I am sincere. I really do mean it. I think everything that we've... Everybody that we've spoken to, we've been slightly different angles on everything. And, you know, we are very early in this journey into pediatrics. We are still learning. That's why we're doing this. And, you know, a lot of the people that we've spoken to have been doing it a long time. They understand it. They've got many more battle scars, I guess, than we do. So they are amazing, and I'll continue to say that.
Fair enough. I think the other one that we've been wanting, the other topic that we've been wanting to address, but we have no experience ourselves yet in this area, and I just don't know where to start, is around mental health. Nick talked about it in a set of words that I found really fascinating, because he was talking about that he wanted to improve child health by preventing obesity and other things that impact ill health, mental health. He was thinking about vulnerable children and safeguarding. And he said that the reason why he's picked out these particular topics is they are so intractable. He talked about there is no easy solution, they're oftentimes bound up with poverty or disadvantage or societal inequality. And so I just think from from a being a human or from an intellectual point of view, that's an absolutely fascinating area. So yeah, picking off one of those areas, mental health and how do we support kids at different ages, is massively topical now, because I know how much some, you know, many children of different ages are, you know, are finding this time in their lives really tricky, and, you know, goodness knows how it plays out in the longer term. So yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think this is something that we could necessarily do justice to in one podcast. So actually, we have a couple of people lined up to talk about mental health and the way that they're addressing it in different scenarios, which again I think are going to be, you know, fascinating conversations. And I dare say that there will be other opportunities to talk about this really, really important subject as we move forward.
For each of the conversations that we have had, there's been a question that you have asked each time at the end. And the question was, if there is one thing that you could change in child health or in paediatric healthcare, what would that be? And we were reflecting earlier on today about all of those. What were your conclusions?
Well, do you know what? What I remember straight away is that the answers weren't quite what I expected them to be. Ian Hennessy's answer was exactly what I would think from Ian, which was, you know, to take pain away from children. And that's always been one of the things that stuck with me, both from our experiences with Oscar and also other readings that I've done and work that I know is happening across the world in terms of looking at pain and pain management for children. And I think, you know, that is... I mean, if you could do it now, you would, you know, it would be absolutely kind of top of the list in a lot of respects. But actually, many of the responses were process orientated or data orientated or even, you know, looking at legislation and trying to change that. And I think it was a much more holistic viewpoint that I wasn't necessarily expecting. Funding, obviously, was a key theme that came up with many people. And, you know, I guess we will continue to bang that drum in terms of, you know, more funding being needed for paediatric healthcare, child health and well-being in general. But yeah, it was a very insightful question to ask. And it was serendipitous. Again, we go back to that word. But Dom Raban and I were having a conversation, and he said that he had asked the clinician that was one of the ones that looked after his daughter, if he could change anything, what would it be? And that's where we got the idea for the question from. And you know, I was thinking, what do we change in season two? And actually, I think we will. Anyone listening to this that wants to be on the podcast or is going to be on the podcast, we're going to ask you that question. So maybe they should be prepared. But was there any others that that stood out for you?
No, I mean, I think you've summarized it. Just as I felt, I thought it was.
Well, so the final one that I'll say on this, and it was, you know, coincidentally, it was the final episode of season one, and it was Michelle. And, you know, again, Michelle talked about, you know, she's running the program called Zero Childhood Cancer. You would think that that would be the number one thing. But her view was that if you could increase or help to broker better partnerships, better collaboration and better funding within the overall spectrum of paediatric healthcare, that would be utopia. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think that encompasses a lot of the conversations that we had and everything that we believe in. One of the things that we did want to take the opportunity to talk about during this episode was, first of all, thank you to everyone that has listened to our podcast over the course of the last 12 episodes. We really hope you've enjoyed them. And if you have, we would be really grateful if you could share those with friends and colleagues, and also subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We're now on Spotify and Amazon and Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and many others, actually, which has been great in terms of, you know, getting the word out there. I think one of the things that we touched on at the beginning, but we've kind of grown in our thinking is who this podcast should be for. And straight away, we hope that clinicians and other and pediatricians will be inspired by it and listen to what their colleagues are doing, and either get in contact with us because they're doing wonderful things themselves, or let us know about colleagues or other topics that they would like to listen to.
I thought that for medical students, it could be something interesting to tune into as well, just because you're, you know, gathering your ideas, and it's great to be able to make connections with topics, different topics you may not have considered, or to meet different people. We've already had a couple of follow-on conversations which have been introducing different folks as a result of listening to the podcast. And, you know, I'd love, we won't always see all the ripples, but it's really lovely when you spot a ripple happening. So yeah, I see that as a good target as well.
Yeah, and investors, businesses, anybody that is looking to do more in child health, then again, if you're listening and you know someone that could be interested, then please do share the podcast on social media, subscribe, and hopefully the more followers we get, the more people that listen to it, then it will grow organically as we go forward. Now, the last thing we want to do during this podcast is do any kind of advertising. However, I mean, we've talked about the difficulty for raising money during lockdown. And one of the first things we did, and so first of all, we're not going to do any advertising on the podcast. That's not why we're here. But one of the first things we did for Thinking of Oscar when we started was to create a cookbook. And we did want to just have a couple of minutes on that.
The cookbook was inspired by the care and compassion that we received in the weeks and months after Oscar died. One day you'd open the front door and there was a loaf of bread. Another day it was Tony's shepherd's pie. It was, we really, really appreciated it. At the time we were living literally from hour to hour, so structuring our brain to write a shopping list was just beyond the realms of possibility. When we reflected on those early weeks, months, and it went well into the first year, we suddenly realised that this was something that could be shared. And so the cookbook is a Thinking of Oscar cookbook made with love. It has a disproportionate representation of cake, for which we don't apologise. But a lot of the recipes were those contributed by friends, and they're easy to make for busy people, whether or not they have a family. There are some fancy pants ones as well. That's because that as we were producing the book and pulling the recipes together, a girlfriend of ours works in this field and was connected to many professional chefs as well. And so we had some really special recipes donated by names that you would recognize as well. The book is available on our website. You can purchase it for £10 plus £2.50 postage and packing. And other than the postage and packing, everything else goes straight to the charity. And we would happily post that out to you as soon as we received your order. We sold, the first 1,000 in about the first 6 weeks. We were going down to the post office on a daily basis. Hundreds of copies were sold through a couple of local cafes. It's been a book that's been really popular. Obviously, we love it, and we hope that you do too.
We hope that our conversation has given you some insight and hopefully whetted your appetite for what is to come in season two. And we'd really love it if you've missed any of the episodes of season one, if you went back and listened to those. We've been fortunate that some of the conversations that we're going to have during season two have come as a result of recommendations and people getting in contact with us. And we would love any more recommendations. So please do get in contact with us if there's someone that you think we should be talking to, or if there's a theme that you would like to hear. We'd love to hear from you, and all our contact details are in the show notes. Next week, as previously mentioned, we're absolutely delighted to be speaking with John Parker. Now, John, I'm fortunate that I can call him a friend now, is the principal for his company, Springhood. And Springhood are the only organisation known across the world at this point in time that exclusively invest in paediatric and child health startups. We look forward to you joining us next week on the Not Many Adults podcast.